Blog Talk Radio.
Unlimited, we call it sometimes. And we have Anthony Rumble Johnson coming on tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern here, about an hour. And until then, we'll be chatting about all things combat sports, from boxing, wrestling, MMA, the works. And I mentioned wrestling because I don't know if you heard this, but Kimbo Slice is changing careers again. Now he doesn't want to be a boxer anymore. He had his run on Survivor, and he came back to train, and his handlers decided that he just doesn't have it in him. He doesn't have the mobility, doesn't have the drive, and obviously he had a little taste of what it's like to just be an entertainer without all the hard work, I guess. And he's already got the physique, natural physique, so he's going to wrestle over in Japan.
Oh, no.
And I think he probably got wind of this whole Brock Lesnar story, and even though that turned out to be a complete fabrication of, you know, a little rumor gone out of control, I think that he's got the idea that if he goes over to Japan and spends maybe a year or two doing his thing there, then the WWE will come calling. I don't know. That's my theory.
He's
in Japan.
Wants to make money. That's his thing. Vince McMahon wants to make money.
Mm-hmm.
He knows if he puts Lesnar out there, there's going to be a chance. You know, that people, I mean, not even a chance. It's the truth. people are going to buy. People are going to buy pay-per-views to see the guy. No, what am I saying? Blockbuster. Sorry, Kimbo Slice. They put Kimbo out there. You know, they know people are going to buy and just to check it out, even though it's going to be staged, obviously. You know, hey, Vince is there to make money.
But the other thing is Kimbo wants to make money, too. Actually,
absolutely.
I got the impression right away the first time I had a chance to be on a conference call with him. And actually on the same conference call, Gary Shaw, the guy that used to be associated with Elite XC and is now back to boxing, was the one who first came up with the idea of Kimbo going into boxing. And he talked a lot about that on that call. But then when I got a chance to ask Kimbo a question, my question was the one that I ask a lot on this show: what's your ultimate goal in the sport? And, you know, he went off on a little bit of a tangent, but he pretty much said, it's all about the paper. Which,
yeah, absolutely,
in street lingo, means cash, you know, cash money. So I'm sure, you know, over in Japan, it's going to be easier for him to make make money without damaging his bad knee and, you know, messing up his face or anything like that. And who knows? You know, the other thing is, obviously, even in America with wrestling, these guys aren't getting tested for steroids and that sort of thing. Not that Kimbo takes steroids, but another reporter on that same call years ago, I think it was back in 2006 when Kimbo was first breaking into the scene there, another reporter asked, you know, what's the difference between when you fight now in the cage and when you used to fight in the backyard? And he said, well, you know, to be honest with you, I used to get high all the time before I fought in the backyard on the street, you know. And now I swore off all that stuff. So he was saying that he didn't even drink alcohol back then. So who knows, maybe he fell off the wagon too. Maybe that's another reason for him to decide to go to wrestling. Obviously in Japan, I would think it's much looser with whatever testing than there would be in the United States, which is already pretty loose. So we'll see. We'll see if Kimbo really takes this seriously.
Like I said, his story is obviously faded in the mixed martial arts ranks. A lot of guys figured him out. Kimbo was a big, strong, physical guy. He could, you know, hit like a ton of bricks, but the fact of the matter is he had two things really working against him. Well, possibly three things. Number one, he just never had the conditioning. And he never would. Tech two. You know, the next thing is the he never had the technique. You know, he never had proper technique. I mean, he could punch, yeah, but as a stand-up boxer, no, he never had great boxing technique, and he had basically no ground game. So that was a big problem. And then the third part about it was, you know, it's like no conditioning, no mat technique, and he was, in all honesty, never had a good chin. I think that got exposed, you know, on that 15-second debacle he had the night I was at my friend's wedding.
Yeah, Seth Petruzzelli has since been released from the UFC, too, being up pretty bad, but...
Yeah, it was funny, because the night of my friend's wedding, we actually got in the hotel lobby until about almost 3:30 a.m., and that's when they had the Sports Center was on, because we were all following, you know, all the college games that we had bet on that day, so we're all checking out our games, and they were like, it's funny, because I got like 14 seconds or whatever it was, and then one of the bridesmaids tried to choke me out. Yeah, she thought I was cute.
Speaking of betting, both our teams are now out of the NFL playoffs. So
don't get me started. There were four teams left. I despise two of them, and I only barely tolerate the other two.
Well,
I hate the Packers because one of their fans, who was a friend of my dad, stiffed me in a bet 7 years ago, or 6 years ago, and I haven't forgiven him since. And then the fact that I know he's happy now, especially because his team beat the Eagles, it puts me in a bad mood. And then, of course, I hate Pittsburgh. I've never liked them, and their fans are not, you know, I'm not fans of their fans. I don't know, I went to a game a couple years ago, the Eagles-Pittsburgh game. There's a bunch of fans there. And the one friend, my friend Laura, the one that I was training for a while. Mm-hmm. And she's all dressed up in, Steelers shit. So the next time she came over to my gym, I made her work out so hard she could barely walk up the steps when she was done. She had this one guy, she had all these pictures of him. He's got his shirt off and all, and he's got all the Steelers emblem like painted on his chest, and he's posing like he's this big tough badass. Then I look at him in a group photo, and Laura, who's only 5'2", is eye-to-eye with this guy. I'm like, how much does this guy weigh, about 103 pounds, and he's posing like he's a badass? I said, I ought to slap the shit out of him just for the fact that I'm just going to slap the shit out of him. That's not nice. I know it's not. I don't care. Now, Rich, before I go any further, I got a very, very, very important person I need to say hello to tonight. Out there in Cyberland, just IM'd me that she's on the line. She actually was live on our air a few weeks ago. Let's do a big, hearty Fight News Unlimited hello to our good friend, Crazy Gianna. What's going on out there, Gianna?
Hey, Gianna. Thanks for listening.
Dennis Bob is probably going to want to get on the computer. Why do I get a shout out? You would like to get a slap out. Oh, okay. Well, before we go any further, I do have a few things I want to cover. Very, very exciting news in the world of boxing. One of our favorites has been training for a comeback.
Really?
Yeah. Probably one of my all-time personal favorites.
Evander Holyfield?
No, myself.
Yeah.
No, I went to that gym last week. I was telling you about the one in locally to me. And I went there, and I see some things that they do really well, and I see some things that I made suggestions to them. Not trying to be, patting myself on the back, but I've been around the sport, once around the block, a few times. So I saw something, great for conditioning. And I saw some things like the tech plan that I was like, well, if I had my input, here's some suggestions I would make. I think they're doing a great job there. I wouldn't mind going there a few times myself just because I really use some of the conditioning stuff that they do. Remember, my strength in the field of boxing was I knew things I could do to get myself in shape. Skipping rope, just a bunch of things, that I knew how to do. But as a conditioning guy, I could do stuff for myself. But if I was trying to train you, Rich, I could have you doing technique stuff like you wouldn't believe. But conditioning for somebody else is never my strong point. Endurance, plyometrics, all stuff like that. So they got that down packed down there, But my strength has always been I know the sport. I know the technical parts of the sport. Balance, timing, counterpunching, angles, reading the guy's mind, reading his body language. That's my strength. So, of course, I've been very excited, since I went there and trying to be a new year and trying to, make myself a little bit more healthy and get back in a little bit better shape. I started, downstairs in my basement again. Just little light things, a little bit of skipping rope here, a little bit of bang in the bag here, little things, I enjoy. And then my dad's been suffering for a while with Crohn's disease. He was recently diagnosed just a few months ago with it. Because there were like times when me and him used to work out together almost every night, doing the mitts and doing drills on the bag and just all good stuff like that. But since he's been, with this Crohn's disease and really not feeling well, he's like, I don't feel well enough to work with you. And I can understand that.
Hey, sorry about that, folks.
All right, we're back. Well, I was saying, my dad with these medications he's been on, upset, the way he was feeling, really feeling bloated, and, he's eating a lot more. And I want to get back into it with you. I'm like, absolutely, Dad. We haven't worked a mix together and haven't worked out together in a really long time. So we started again last night, and I'm like, the one thing we got to do differently, and if you watch some of our old videos, we used to freestyle it. You know, I would just go up there and throw punches, and then he would always be really good at just catching him, working him in. But it got to the point where our timing was starting to get off. And I was like, no, Dad, we got to start calling punches again. You know, you got to call them, and I can throw them. And for a while, he was calling them, but he was trying to catch them before I even, you know, would even throw the punch. And I mean, you got to wait and react to the punch I throw. Just like you're a professional baseball catcher. You call a fastball, you let me throw it, and then you catch it. Don't try to catch the pitch till it gets there. So last night, instead of working out again, and he was really getting into it, and it was great, you know. So by the end of it, you know, I was getting tired, you know. I haven't done this in a while. And we went back down there tonight, and he was getting all probably a little bit, hey, you got another one in there? I'm like, no, I think we've done enough. My hands are numb, you know. I got to condition my hands back into this, too. But it feels good to be back into it. It feels good to be throwing punches again, like, almost like I'm alive again. I was joking around with him last week. You know, we were talking about boxing, and I was like, you know, because I can see it in your eyes. He's like, you know, you're excited again. And I'm like, yeah, Dad, I said, yeah, everybody needs a challenge. I said, because we're the Warriors. I said, without no damn challenge, without no war to fight, well, the Warrior might as well just be dead. And he looked at me. I said, Apollo Creed from Rocky IV, who got killed. No, it feels good. So my arms are sore as hell tonight. And that's what I wrote on my Facebook. I was like, I said, sometimes you feel like you ain't got nothing left. And you reach down inside you as deep as you can go and realize you got even less. Well, it's got to start somewhere. I feel pretty damn good. And got some really good work done last night and again tonight. And, you know, we're just going to take it from there. And take it from there and be like the tornado of old.
Yes. Well, I have to train for a 185-pound bout like I'm back in college again. I'm 200 pounds right now. And we just got about 16 inches of snow over the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to be pulling a Rocky IV. a couple of weeks to start my transition here from fat ass to skinny fuck.
Well, some of the things here about this gym, I was learning techniques that I never knew about. And the one thing, like, he has you compete with other people there. Like, well, they do some sparring there. They were sparring tonight. Obviously, I didn't get a chance to go watch it. But, he goes, what time you on drills and compare you with other guys. Like the one guy I was watching the other night, he had him flip it over a big truck tire, a big-ass truck tire, and then he'd flip it over once, and he would jump on it, then jump in it, and then jump on it again, go to the other side, flip it over. He had to do it 10 times. He was doing it about a minute and a half. And then he'd be, okay, we had another guy here a little bit ago. He did it in a minute, like, 15, so you got to try to beat his score. And it was all different, interesting things like that, things that, it was all foreign to me. I mean, I never knew that. I knew a truck car. I used to bounce on the thing, you know, for leg conditioning. I never knew about lifting them up and flipping them over and shit like that. That's all new to me. It was all interesting stuff. I think it is. I mean, like, I need a truck car from Dr. Cox just to, you know, bring one there and have you bounce on it because he learned that from Cuba. One thing I enjoyed doing the other night was the one young guy that was training, he's obviously very much a rookie in the sport. And, you know, technique needs hard work, but the technique needs a lot of work. And, you know, he was sparring, but he was doing his head movement. And you could tell that he wasn't, you know, he didn't have balance when he was doing it. And he was making little mistakes. He was getting off balance. And then I was like, you know, I asked permission. I'm like, do you mind if I get in the ring just to give him a, you know, quick piece of advice? And the trainer was like, Very nice to me, allowed me in his ring. And the trainer, obviously, he has about 5 inches on me, height-wise, which everybody I thought did. So I said, you know, when I was first starting out, I was the guy that would come straight in. And I didn't have really good head movement. And I would just come in, I was almost like a Rocky Balboa, and I was just taking a lot of beatings. Unfortunately, I wasn't dishing out much of a beating back then. I was just sucking them off. And I said, well, the things that I learned, I'm like, you know, I learned how to time the guy's jab, see it developing his shoulder. That way I could catch his jab and counter with my own and stop him from jabbing. I said, also circling to the side, giving yourself angles where you're shortening his reach and putting him on a bad angle. And then I said, when you're moving in a circle, you know, you're forcing him to move to keep up with you. You're controlling him in that ring. All little things like that. And I said, the way they taught me how to slip punches, you know, we were in the gym one night. I was 18 years old. I had a couple fights under my belt. You know, I competed in the regionals that year. I lost by decision. And they had another young guy who was just starting. They wanted him to really work on, you know, throwing his jab the right way. So they put us in there together. I put my headgear on, put my mouthpiece in. And he was aiming at the ringside logo on my forehead. That way, if anything got through, you know, I teach guys this now. When you're learning techniques like this, yeah, aim for the guy's padded part of his forehead. Because, yeah, most likely punches will get through. But you're not hitting him in the face. You're not making him gun shy until he really learns what he's doing. Then, obviously, then things are going to change. You know, then you can obviously aim more and, you know, so be more realistic. So they put me in there, and Rick, you would know this just as well as I would. When you're in there in a drill, and say me and you were working a drill, and you're working defense, I'm working offense, even if we're going slow, and I'm throwing jabs at you, and you're catching them, and you're slipping them. But the tendency is, if you're not throwing any punches, you are going to back up. It's not a bad thing. It's a natural thing because you feel uncomfortable. And that was the thing, is I was backing up. And they're like, no, you can't back up like that. You have to learn how to stand in the pocket, see the punch coming, either block it and counter or slip it and counter. So they said, put your back in the corner where you can't back up. And that's what I was showing this kid. I said, I'm back in the corner now. And it's like I had to either catch or slip. They're like, no, you're catching too many punches. You're not confident enough in your ability to slip. Put your hands at your sides and leave them there. Don't pick your hands back up to the end of the round. And that was the thing. You had to have your hands to your sides. And these punches were coming. They weren't coming fast. They weren't coming hard. But they were still going to hit you in the face. So you had to slip every one of them. But you learned how to stand in the pocket. You learned how to see that punch develop from the shoulder. And by the time it landed, like they always say in football, Rich, they say, boy, you know, a quarterback, he's a rookie. The game is moving really fast for him. And I never knew what that meant until I started boxing. What it means is this guy is a quarterback, and he's taking the snap. By the time he gets back there and he sees his receiver, he goes to throw it. Well, he's got six guys in his face, and he goes to throw that pass to a guy he thought was open. The quarterback's already there, or the safety's already there to pick it off. And everything's happening so fast, and the defense is sending all these blitzes. But when you become experienced, and you become like a guy like a Brett Favre, or, you know, Dan Marino or Joe Montana, a guy that's really great, you drop back. Or, hey, I'll give you this one. Give it to Tom Brady, and now I know you're happy. You drop back, and all that stuff is going in the same speed. You see, it's going in slow motion. And you see your receiver make the cut. You see the cornerback bite on the pump fake. You see, you know, your offensive lineman pick up the blitz. And then you can thread that pass in there because it's going slower. That's the same thing with boxing. My first sparring session, three or four punches were hitting me before I could even blink. Then, as I got better, it's like I'd see the punch coming, and I'd read a novel by the time it got there. Yeah, that, and those are all the things that I like to teach, you know, others to, you know, things that I've learned and I think can help implement, you know, young up-and-coming fighters.
I can remember my first real competitive match at Air Force Academy when they put me in against a sophomore who had already been through the boxing program the year before. And I had only been to like a once-a-week clinic that they had in my hometown growing up. And just trained on my own up for them. So they threw me in with him, and it was the closest I ever came to a knockout, except for when I fought my senior year, I fought a freshman at Norwich, and I told him to give him the last 30 seconds to do what he wanted. And he had to break my promise because he was about to knock me out. But this first one was even worse than that because I can remember I had the worst headache for like an hour afterwards, and I had to lay down. And I made it through, but still, it was like, you know, when you get that first taste, there's just nothing like it. You know, you think you're ready, you know, you think you're prepared no matter how hard you train. You can't prepare for that if you haven't been there, so.
Right. Well, okay, my first sparring session at Lockheed, like, we used to do this the stuff when we were younger. We'd put the gloves on and stuff. Now, I'm going to tell a funny story only because the person I gave a shout-out to, I'm going to bust on the father. John, who's on the line, her father, Joey, was talking to me the other week, and he was going to come up and train with me one night. He's like, I'm going to box southpaw. I said, you're right-handed, you're going to do what? I'm going to box southpaw. I said, no, you're not. Not much, you're not. Why not? I'm like, because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
I said, because you ain't a southpaw, and you're basically handicapped, and you're left on. You're not even using it. Yeah, but I've always boxed softball. I said, oh, really? I said, your boxing experience, because when we were 14 years old, and you put the gloves on with me, and you lasted 20 seconds, 10 of those seconds being the count. I said, you're going to imagine you're not boxing softball. But that was just one thing I had to say to Gianna on the line. I thought she would laugh about that. And Gianna, tell your father he is in the gym with me, and he's not boxing softball.
Facebook page right now. It looks like she's pretty psyched to be able to show that.
She is. My first sparring session at Lock Haven, I think part of it was Dr. Cox wanted to embarrass me a little bit because I was kind of a mouthy freshman, you know. And I know Doc, as well as I know him now, he put me in there with one of his All-Americans, and he basically told the guy to teach me a lesson. That bell rang, and we came to the center of the ring, and three punches slammed off my head, like I said, before I even knew what happened. And he was beating me up pretty good, and, he knocked me on my ass. And I was like, damn. And then like a month later, Dr. Cox was taking me and a few other students to Rockview State Penitentiary, one of the biggest prisons in the state of Pennsylvania, because Coach Coop was like the athletic director there, and we were sparring with the inmates. And I had an inmate kicking my ass all over the ring. And those are things that, kind of toughen me up a little bit. It made me, who I am now. I mean, I was telling this young gentleman the other night that was training, I said, I was an All-American at Lock Haven, and I said, I won a lot of fights. And I won a lot of fights at Lock Haven. I said, and I lost some fights here at Granddad. I rarely ever won any fights because I was the more skilled opponent or the better athlete. I won fights for two reasons. Either I was smarter and I just knew how to, control the pace, do the angles, slip the punches, or I won fights because I just wanted it a little bit more. And I was willing to, stand in there when the going got tough, take a few shots. I was willing to smile through my own blood. There were times I went in there with a broken nose. I didn't care. I was talking to a friend of mine tonight. Talking about the time down at VMI. Now, and I had a defect in my mouthpiece, and it ripped my upper lip in half. Mm. I could hold my upper lip open. It was pouring blood. And I said, no, I want to continue this fight. And the doctor wouldn't let me. I called him an asshole. I called him a few other choice words. One of them, a word that rhymes with duck. and then they said, you have to go get stitches. And I said, no, I will not go get stitches. I will fight next week. Because it's an annual show at Lock Haven, and I refuse to miss it. They said, that's impossible. There's no way you will be able to pass the physical with that cut in your mouth if you don't get stitches. I said, I'm not getting stitches. And I went back. The whole trip back from VMI, I had an ice bag in my mouth. And I got back, and I took a handful of salt, and I put it in the open wound, and it burned like hell. But I was able to cure it just enough to seal that cut so I could pass the physical the next week. I mean, even when I went into the pre-fight physical, and it was Dr. Cox's son, Larry, was one of the physicians, and Dr. Keith Adams, who his son did a little boxing for Lock Haven. I was kind of a mentor to the kid because he was a young teenager when I was a freshman, and I kind of helped him out. He was a very shy kid. And they both looked at me and said, boy, there's a note in your passbook saying about a cut in your mouth, but we don't really see anything. I just smiled at him. I said, see, we're a little bit scarring, but nothing bad that you can't fight tonight. Well, I knew it, but I also knew the first punch that I got hit with solidly was going to open me up. And I said, okay, I got to box smart tonight. I got to box smart. I got to avoid getting hit. ding, ding. Went right to the center of the ring, took a shot right in the mouth, and within 5 seconds, I'm spewing blood all over the place. And they both kind of looked at me, and they've known me for so long, they didn't even look twice. You know, lip was ripped in half again, and I had no problem. That was in the first 5 seconds of the fight. I went on, went all three rounds, and won.
Nice. I had an injury with my tooth going through my lip one time in wrestling, but the only thing I ever got in boxing was a black eye. Never got a bloody nose. Never got a bad lip. Just always got hit in the eye. I think I adopted the Mike Tyson stance, the gloves on the chin a lot. Always had one hand up. I was a very defensive fighter, too. You know, so I was always waiting for the other guy to make a mistake before I throw anything and open myself up. But speaking of comebacks, I didn't want to mention before we get too deep into the show that...
If I ever want to do a comeback, I got to lose about 800 pounds, though. I used to be at my old job.
If you remember,
Christy... I had a woman to work with, and I was about 190 pounds at the time. I was only a little bit over my fighting weight. I was like, yeah, I got to lose about 50 pounds. Oh, my God, hey, you can't lose that much. You shouldn't lose any more. I'm like, no, I got to lose at least 50 more pounds. And then I would tell her that I would always make up a weight class that I wanted to fight in. I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking about taking a fight at welterweight. What's that? I'm like, 147. Oh, my God, you can't get down to 147. Then I'm like, oh, you think I should get down to 135? No, that's terrible. Next thing I knew, I was getting down to 78 pounds. And I had to believe him that I was going to fight at 78 pounds. Then he goes there, I'm like, yeah, I got to lose about 700 pounds. He's like, 700? I'm like, yeah, at least. And we had she was always worried about me. As usually older people are, you know, I think they think I'm half nuts or something. I don't know. So I was like, bonus stuff. And the one day, I had a fake contract typed up, and I faxed it from our one fax machine to our other fax machine. Like, it came in from my trainer and manager. I was going to fight, and I was going to fight this guy on a certain date, and I had to get down, like, whatever this weight class was, and I was going to sign it on the spot, and I needed a witness, and I wanted her to co-sign it as my witness. Mm-hmm. She was, oh, my God, I can't do this. I'm like, we had a blast with it, you know. I drove that poor woman nuts.
It's funny you mention that because Anthony Rumble Johnson, who we're going to talk to at 9, is infamous for cutting a ton of weight before his fights. And he's rumored to have been, in the past, had to cut 50 pounds before a fight. And he said those are just rumors, you know, but it is true that he tends to cut with 40 pounds from 210 to 170. Before his fights, and it's kind of unfortunate the way mixed martial arts is set up that the weight classes are so far apart that guys have to do that. And of course, there is a 205 weight class, but you know, like in all wrestling all over the world, you know, even in boxing and MMA, obviously the lowest weight that you can get, the more conditioned you're going to be. But talking about comebacks, I wanted to mention Christy Martin, who was stabbed and shot by her husband, is now fighting back.
Is her husband still working a corner? Is he still a manager?
Her husband is getting arrested. He was already arrested. And, he's going to be up for charges. And actually, it's kind of funny in a way. The whole reason for the fight in the first place was apparently Christy had told him that she was leaving him for another woman. And although there hasn't been much since it was mentioned in the actual police report that she actually told the police that she told him she was leaving him for a woman named Sherry, there hasn't been anything since then about, you know, whether that whole situation is true or there was a woman that caused that situation. But she, Christy Martin, is now talking about a comeback, and she's working with the famous attorney, Gloria Allred, who's been out there for women's issues. She's known as a feminist, and there's even rumors out there that Gloria Allred is a lesbian. And I just kind of casually searched it on Google the other day, you know, Gloria Allred lesbian, and boom, what pops up? But an article that says, yeah, you know, she's a closet lesbian and she has a preference for young blondes. But Gloria Allred participated in a big press conference about Christy Martin's comeback. It's going to be March 12th this year, and it's going to be on the Cotto Mayorga undercard. And TMZ actually has a video about the whole situation where Gloria got up there, and some say she even outdid Don King with her introduction of the fight and explanation of the whole incident. So I'm just going to play that now. It's about a couple minutes of talking like a lawyer talks, but actually she's playing more of a promoter in this clip. Here it goes.
Super welterweight boxing champion of the world, WBC. Christy at this time is the alleged victim in a criminal case now pending in Orlando, Florida, and I represent her in that matter. The prosecutor alleges that on November 23rd, 2010, Christy's husband attempted to murder her by stabbing Christy in the chest, puncturing her lungs, stabbing her in the legs so deeply that she was cut almost to the bone, pistol whipping her, bashing her head into the nightstand, and shooting her. Her husband, now in jail, is charged with attempted murder with a firearm, attempted murder with a deadly weapon, and aggravated battery. This trial was scheduled for this May 2011. Despite what Christy has had to endure, she has refused to let what she has suffered break her or her fighting spirit. Recently, the bullet was removed from her back, and Christy pledged to resume her boxing career, which she loves. She has been cleared by her doctor to train and is training hard to be a true fighter. She has a degree from a traditional college and a college of hard knocks. Inspiration to every woman who has been down but refuses to be counted out. Christy is back. She is strong, tough, and committed to winning. She's a true coal miner's daughter, and she's giving it her all. She is resilient, re-energized, and ready for victory. Watch out, world. On March 12th, you will see a woman strong and empowered, long, beautiful, and brave, strengthened by adversity, cheered on by her fans, and respected, even by her foes. Make way for Christy Martin, a winner and true champion, not only in the boxing ring, but also in our hearts.
Aw.
That's cute.
That was just this past week. And just goes to show you that, you know, even the worst circumstances in life, people come back from, you know. So guys like us, just sitting around doing our writing thing and doing the daily grind, can come back to boxing if she can come back from getting shot, stabbed, and face smashed against the nightstand. So, jeez. That's inspiration enough, I think. But other than that, another guy is leaving boxing. I don't know if you heard this, but John Duddy is retiring, even though he was...
He's getting talked about in it anymore, you know? Well, that's a good thing. You know, as you said, it's better to... walk out if you're not, you know, if your heart's not in it anymore, and try to keep fighting, not put out the best effort, and take unnecessary punishment.
Right. And I wrote an article about the whole situation for opposingviews.com, and I kind of looked over his record, and I realized that, you know, there's this, even though he didn't mention any kind of health concerns, you know, if you look at his last nine fights compared to his first nine fights, it was a hell of a difference. His first nine fights,
yeah.
Seven of them he won by knockout. Or no, his first nine fights, all of them ended by knockout. Seven of them were in the first round. And in his last nine bouts, only one knockout in the first round. And then the other eight went the distance. And that left...
Right there, when he stepped up in competition, obviously he wasn't, you know, the same fighter.
Right. and those last nine fights represent 80 of its 183 rounds boxed over the course of his whole career. And his last fight was against an undefeated Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And ironically enough, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is going to be fighting the only other guy to ever beat Duddy in, at the end of January here, down in Mexico. January 29th, 2011, Chavez will be fighting Billy Lyell, who is 22-8 with four knockouts. And those are the only two guys to ever beat Gian Duddy. And he goes out with a loss, but you know, at the same time, he would have had to face a really tough guy for his next payday. He would have only got $100,000 and a percentage of the gate, which I'm sure he can find a way to make elsewhere, you know, whether he wants to go into promotional circles or commentate or even open his own gym. I'm sure, you know, he can make that over the course of the next year instead of just, you know, doing it all on one night and going in there without his heart in it. So wish him luck, and I've seen some great fights of his over the years. My favorite was probably his fight with Yuri Boy Campos there, which I think was at one time a candidate for Fight of the Year that year. I forget when it was actually went down, but man, that was a fight. I think that was the first time I'd ever seen him. Very impressive. But, he's going out, and it kind of reminded me and made me think about the whole the new FX series, The Lights Out. I don't know if you're getting to see any of those episodes. It's been two episodes. You haven't seen it yet? Plays off of Rocky Balboa, of course, like all boxing drums seem to. But there's a whole aspect of the mob involved. You know, in his retirement, he ends up being a leg breaker, even though he has to break an arm rather than a leg. and he gets wrapped up in the mob. He gives a payout to a DA. Just all kinds of stuff that. Which makes you think they're just outright stealing from the blood of Rocky. But it was actually kind of interesting when I read about the whole development of the series. I found out that they brought in a new writer to retool it after the initial story was brought to them. And this writer is famous for, you know, putting layers into different scenarios and adding family drama and all sorts of other stuff. And so this guy changed the whole initial concept. And it's a pretty decent, framework that they have going there. The first two episodes just kind of go into how, you know, this guy is starting to get involved in all kinds of things that are just sucking his money away. The IRS is coming after his brother. They're supposed to be working on a big development that is pretty much going to shit, and it's not making them any money. It's just hemorrhaging, and it doesn't even look like they can sell the property to get out from under it. So it all begins on the idea of, you know, his last fight was one that he looked back on with a lot of regret because he lost the fight by decision, but a lot of people thought he won. So now, you know, however many years later it's supposed to be, this guy that he fought is sick of all the talk that he lost the fight, so he calls him out and wants him to fight again, and the purse is out there for $10 million. And this guy's got money problems. He had the term of being a leg breaker for the mob. So obviously he's going to come back. You know, that's what the whole series is about. But the wife doesn't want him to fight. He's got a family. He turns out, you know, him and his daughter are the only ones who know, but turns out he's got pugilistic dementia already. And there's one scene in the second episode where he actually gets back in the ring again under his father's encouragement, his father's his trainer. And he gets back in the ring to work with a rookie coming up. And of course, the rookie tries to get fresh with him, and he makes him pay. So the father stops the fight and yells at him.
But you can tell just by the look in his eye that he's ready. You know, he's going to come back. So I think it'll be a good series run. And hopefully it'll be at least a couple seasons on it. And maybe it'll be good for boxing, maybe not. But I hate that stereotype, like, you know, that Rocky started with. You know, the boxers just obviously have to get into organized crime if they're not boxing anymore. I don't know of any real life examples of that really happening outside of on the screen, you know. So I just hate to see that that whole thing coming back, because as we both know, you know, back in throughout the history of boxing, the mob played a pretty big role in, you know, the corruption of the sport and everything like that. You can look at stories like obviously, you know, Jake LaMotta and Raging Bull, that whole movie describing the whole, you know, him having to throw the fight there and the controversy surrounding that. And, you know, I think these days that it's all past and gone and different story, but these movies and stuff and the series is trying to make it seem like it's still a huge issue, and like that's the natural thing for fighters to go to after they retire and they don't have any money. They would be leg breakers. And I don't know if that's true. Even though I do know that, you know, it's kind of funny to mention that.
Always true, but I think a lot of times guys like to do some training after they retire because it's still a way to feel like you're in that spotlight. You're still, I mean, like, okay, take a guy like myself, you know. I boxed for, you know, a long time, had a number of fights, did very well, enjoyed every second of it. But then sometimes, like, I miss that ring walk with the anticipation in the locker room. You miss that shit, you know? Because it's like, you know, you're getting in there and your adrenaline's starting to pump. And sometimes for a guy that's, you know, not fighting anymore, but he's training, you're still in that locker room. And even though you're not going to be the one, you know, swapping the punches, you still feel that nervousness. You still feel that excitement. You're still in that, you know, walk to the ring. And even though all the eyes still aren't you, but sometimes it feels like they are on you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is, you know, the warrior spirit, like you mentioned earlier, you always have that. It's something that, you know, once you get into your first fight or you win your first fight, you know, sometimes when you lose your first fight, it doesn't happen, but definitely when you win your first fight, you get that feeling and you just can't get enough of that. And it's like, it's such an adrenaline rush. You know, the thing for me lately, before I broke my ankle, for the most part, and since then I've tried to get back in, and just haven't stuck with it. But before I broke my ankle and I was real serious about training, the thing that got me going was, you know, whether you actually have a fight or not, it's really one of the best sports you can get involved in for fitness. And even Dana White, who went over to the UFC, used to be a boxer-sized instructor. So, and there's the whole thigh bowl thing, you know. It's a workout. It's a hell of a workout. And it's fun, you know. You can lift weights all day long, and it's not really fun. It's not exciting. And whether you're fighting an actual combatant or you're hitting the bag, you know, it's like, you know, there's a certain feeling you get from landing a good punch, you know, each time you land it, and each time you, you know, go through the movements and stuff, and imagine yourself in the ring while it's all going on. It's exciting. It's fun. And, I mean, people get addicted fast to it because of that. You know, and I always tell the story that when I used to coach at Norwich, all the girls that came down to practice all of a sudden because of the ab workouts we used to do. We had, like, literally one practice. All of a sudden, I'm starting practice and, like, 12 girls walking through. I said, what the hell is this? We heard about your ab workouts. I used to do a half an hour at the end of practice and do a big circle and do every single ab workout I could think of, you know, ab exercise. And a lot of them I got from our training at the Air Force Academy. They used to really, you know, go nuts with the push-ups and sit-ups and
flutter kicks, they call them. I don't know if you ever heard of those, but fun stuff, let me tell you. But yeah, we used to go through the gamut of everything. And, you know, once those girls actually started throwing punches, too, they, a lot of them stuck with it. You know, so they came for the ab workout and they stayed for the rest. But one of the best workouts we used to do is you'd have one person laying on the floor with their hands behind their back and clenching stomach muscles, and the other person standing on their feet over them and then bending down and just throwing punches as hard as they could at the person's body. You know, and they weren't allowed to block. They just had to take it. And that was really one of the best ab workouts that you could do for the sport, particularly because it's teaching you how to take a punch. And there was one occasion where we had a girl who came out for the program, and it just so happened that her drill sergeant was also in the program. So she partnered up with him one day and got to get some revenge for all the yelling. So that was kind of funny to watch that. But yeah, you know, coming back, it's kind of funny we talk so much about that before we even get this guy on the phone here who's coming back from more than a year layoff because of an injury. So I'm sure he'll have a lot to talk about there. And we'll get him on the phone here in about 10 minutes. But other than that, I don't know. As far as boxing coming up, I'll have to check this out.
ESPN last week. I didn't know. Unfortunately, I missed the main event, but that was Peter Manfredo against Daniel Edwards. And like I said, I missed it. I fell asleep kind of early. And I remember my dad, I was sleeping on the couch in the recliner, or on the recliner, I should say. And my dad said, "Oh my God, you got to see this knockdown." And I looked up, and I saw the replay, but Edwards pitched forward and landed on the face. He said, "What the hell have you happened?" And he's like, "You caught him with a shot." Well, it was a great shot right on the chops from Peter Manfredo. He had lost the first few rounds, and he came on, and they were in a clinch. They were coming out of the clinch, and sometimes you see a guy coming out of the clinch and acting like the referee broke it up when he didn't. And Edwards dropped his hands, and Manfredo hit him with a short little right hand, like right on the chops. And Edwards went down hard. And then Manfredo really picked it up and, you know, beat him up pretty bad over the last so many rounds, the last 57 rounds. And it went to a decision. Obviously, Manfredo won convincingly. And it was enough to convince Edwards to announce his retirement.
Mm-hmm. Well, we still have Edward's number somewhere. We're going to have to try to get him on the show one of these days to talk about that. His next career move, I guess. But just looking at the schedule here. A pretty interesting event coming up in Mexico on the 22nd, Saturday. We have a 12-round bantamweight fight between Hugo Ruiz, 26-1, with 25 knockouts, and Alvaro Perez, 19-2, with 12 knockouts, one draw for the interim WBAA World Bantamweight title. Also have a 10-rounder super flyweight female fight, Ana Maria Torres, 23-3, with two draws, 14 knockouts, fighting Mayuko Yamaguchi, 16-2 with 14 knockouts and 3 draws for the WBC female super flyweight title. And also another female fight, flyweight, Aroi Mushino, 10-0 with 6 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Chantel Cordova, who's 8-1 with 1 draw, 3 knockouts for the vacant IBF female flyweight title. And thirdly, we have Irma Sanchez, 18-4, 1 draw, 5 knockouts, fighting Katia Gutierrez, 11-2, with 3 knockouts, for the vacant IBF female light flyweight title.
a bunch of female flyweights down there in Mexico. And speaking of females, I think I mentioned this before, maybe last week, but it's official now. Holly Hot Stuff Dunaway is going over to MMA. And we're working on trying to hook up an interview with her. And I didn't realize until the other day when I did a Google search for her that one of the top 10 pages that shows up under her name is her page on Fight Space Online, which I created. So. And I went over to Fight Space Online, and I looked at her page, and back in January of 2010, last year, somebody suggested on that page that she go into MMA. So, make a long story short, I might be responsible indirectly for her going into MMA, because if I didn't create that, maybe nobody would have ever approached her about that idea. But somebody right in the first comment on her page had suggested that to her, so I kind of feel somewhat responsible for that. But I really think she could be the next Gina Carano. You know, I know Gina's supposed to be coming back one of these days, and you know, she's been probably the prettiest face and body to compete in the sport, and Holly blows that away. I think she's much hotter. She's not called Hot Stuff for no reason, and she just had a penthouse spread. I think she was in penthouse, so unbelievable. But we'll see. See if that works out for her. I think that she's got a tough competition going on. She's fighting a girl who's 4-1 in MMA with a couple of submissions. So she's going to have a fight cut out for her, that's for sure. But I can't wait to see it. I'm sure it's going to be on some kind of YouTube or viral video one of these days. Also this Saturday in Puerto Rico, we have a pretty interesting super bantamweight fight between Jonathan Oquendo, 19-2, 12 knockouts, and Cecilio Santos, 25. Why not? Easy off triggers. Actually from our Blog Talk Radio site. Go figure. If you can, our own radio show is interrupting our radio show. But, so much for that. Anyway, continuing the schedule here. Don't really have anything else until next week.
Showtime last week. It was a ESPN card. Very happy that ESPN is not covering anything on Friday night. Gives me a reason to stay at home, keep myself out of trouble. I can stay in, watch the fight, and then Saturday night for going out and getting in trouble.
Well, I know that there's a big UFC event coming up, Fight for the Troops. It's coming up at the end of the week, but we got about a minute to get Anthony on, so might as well call him a few seconds early. My dog's afraid of the cat. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Cat's laying on the stairs. Dog wants to go upstairs. Cat won't let him.
My dog's been, you know, monitoring all my workouts lately. He comes downstairs and watches me work out. He has to take his tennis ball away from him and put it on the table because he will drop it on the floor right by where you're trying to work out. And next thing I know, I'll be going to the hospital with a broken ankle, and that's not exactly what I'm looking to do. So I'm able to stand there and park the entire rest of the time that I'm working out.
Get him, Bart.
What a wuss. All right, well, let's get Anthony Rumble Johnson on here. You know he's another wuss. Hi, Anthony?
Yes.
Hi, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. How's it going?
Excuse me?
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
Oh, what's up, man? How you doing, sir?
Good. I'm going to interview today.
Yeah, at first I didn't know what you said, so I was confused.
Sorry about that. We also have Tony the Tornado on the line with us.
Yo, what's up?
What's up, man?
Thank you much.
And I was just reading today a little bit about your upcoming fight here with Dan Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
And, looks like you're both trying to make a little bit of a comeback. He's trying to come back from a couple of losses, and you've been out for a while with some injuries, right?
Yeah.
So what are you give me predictions or anything like that for this fight? What are you doing to get ready?
No predictions, but a win. That's the only prediction I can give you. I don't know how, I don't know when, but I'm a win. Dan's a really tough opponent, and I'm really looking forward to having a good fight with him.
All right. And I also noticed, I saw the fight where Dan already got pretty much demolished by Carlos Condit. And are you looking to try to get that same result with the stand-up?
Of course. That's what I try to do at every fight.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is your ultimate goal in the sport?
Just to be a champion and be known as the guy who always went out there and did his best.
All right. And how did you first get into MMA and fighting in the first place?
My neighbor up in college, he just kept asking me to try his dad's gym, and we tried it out, and I loved it.
Yeah, my favorite. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, I'll say, Richard, tell me, this is your first fight, kind of almost like a comeback fight. I mean, is there any? How do you feel right now? I mean, is there any extra nervousness, or is it just crazy anticipation? Or are you chopping at the bit to go? Or, what's going through your mind right now?
Well, right now, I'm excited, man. I haven't fought in a year. You know what I mean? So I am just excited to actually get to fight again and get to fight a guy the caliber of Dan Hardy. So it's an honor for me to be able to fight Dan, and be back in UFC and be back on the team, because I miss it, and seeing all these guys getting the fight and stuff like that, it kind of gets to you.
And, as far as the layoff goes, what was that like, having to kind of sit on the sidelines and deal with an injury when you want to fight? What was it like to have to kind of sit on the sidelines during your...
It's tough. Like I say, it's seeing everybody do the sport that you love and do the things you love to do. I mean, it's tough just having to sit back and watch it.
Right. And do you have a favorite fighter out there that you like to watch?
Let's see. Of course, I love to watch GSP. I love to watch Thiago Alves fight. I love to I love to watch anybody who really puts it on the line, to be honest with you. So, I mean, overall favorite fighters, no. But, I mean, it's a couple of guys who really put it out, put it on the line to you know, give it their all and give the fans what they deserve.
And there's actually been talk about you fighting John Howard, who just had a tough fight in himself. So, are you still wanting to fight him?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Actually, I met John not too long ago in Boston. We had a big event there and met him and talked to him, and he goes to a couple local events there around town. And, you know, he's doing pretty good there. He's undefeated in the UFC until his last couple of fights and a couple of real tough opponents. So,
yeah, I mean, this UFC is really tough. You know, so, I mean, you're going to win, you're going to lose, I mean, nobody's perfect. You know, by any means necessary. Nobody's perfect, so it just happens, man.
Right. Well, the other thing now is with the WEC merger and so many more guys under their banner, it seems like they're starting to really take losses in a different light now. So do you feel that? Do you see that? Do you feel the pressure now is greater to win? In an exciting fashion and everything?
No. Because no matter what, I mean, that ain't going to be no pressure for me, because I'm going to always go out there and do my best no matter what and put on an exciting fight. So with those guys coming to it, I mean, hell, that, I mean, I think it's great for the fans. I think they deserve to be up there anyway, because a lot of little guys that don't get the credit they deserve.
Right. And do you have any role models over the years who helped you out and got you involved and kept you going?
The only role model I had was my granddad. And, you know, he was my best friend. So he's the only role model I really had.
Yeah, I read, I think I read on Chair Dog something about how he's the one that ingrained in you can do anything if you put your mind to it.
Yeah.
I can really relate to that, because that's one of the things that my dad drove into my head when I was growing up. So right away, I said, wow, that's you know, the same thing that got me going.
Yeah. Well, you know, other than that, my granddad, and he passed away. Now with my grandmother, she's got my back 110%. So, I mean, you know, I'm happy, man. I'm still doing what I love to do, and I'm still blessed to have the family and friends that I have and the support, so everything's still going good with me.
Depending on what your grandfather was doing in you know, your life, your career, now you say that he is gone. When you get in there, do you almost feel like he's going to evict you sometimes? Because that's so good. I only knew one of my grandfathers. He passed away 11 years before I even had my first amateur fight. And I just remember a lot of things that my dad taught me about him. Like, and I remember him saying, he's like, man, I wish he was here today to see you, because he enjoyed the fight so much. And that was, I mean, he was back in the Rocky Marciano era, and he was, you know, being an Italian guy, a big fan of the Marcianos and Rocky Gracianos and all those guys, you know, boxing. And he was like, man, you're out there, I wish, you know, he could see you here today, because he is. Some of the things you do out there remind so much of Marciano, just the way you fight. And all I knew was that your grandfather would be so proud of you. And, I mean, that really meant something to me.
Thank you, man. Thank you. You know, my granddad was always supportive, and he told me, like, you know, never give up. So that's what I'm trying not to do. You know, I'm trying to live by his word.
And that's, you know, the best way to, you know, honor his memories, you know, you go out there and, you know, just give it 110% every time you go out there, because that's something I live by. And like I said, that way, you know, he's still with you doing that.
Of course.
Now, Anthony, what would you say you love most about MMA? What's the best thing about sport?
I just love competition, man. I just love competition, period. It's better than, you know, sitting behind a desk and air conditioning and stuff, you know what I mean? Even though that sounds kind of nice, you know, I'd rather go out there and actually really do some entertainment. I don't know, man. I just love it. I love the aspect of just you can possibly get hurt in the sport and come out with a fat check at the same time. So why not?
Right. Well, yeah, that's the other thing about the UFC. We talk a lot about, you know, the whole bonus system. Sometimes it seems fair. Sometimes it's kind of luck of the draw. Other times, you know, they left it to the fans at one time, and they just seem to go on popularity. What do you think about that whole system? Does it motivate you to try to get that knockout of the night or submission of the night?
Like I said, man, I'm always going to do my best, and I'm always trying to finish all my fights by knockout. So, to me, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I'm always do me. So, if I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. I don't try to worry about the next guy.
Right. Do you have a favorite style or submission or punch or anything like that or strike that you favor?
No, as long as it lands, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. And is anybody out there other than John that we talked about, and obviously the Hardy fight is already signed, but anybody else out there you really want to fight?
Everybody do. I just want to fight them all because, you know, you can't say, hey, I want to fight this person, and then, you know, when you say that, you might, you know, lose to somebody you already beat and stuff. And everybody's beating everybody, so you can't just be like, yeah, I want to fight this person, that person, because everybody's upset all the time in MMA. So, call out one, you
got to
call them all out.
Right. What do you think about the general growth of the sport over the years? You know, it sounds like you started a little bit later in the evolution of the sport, but you've obviously seen it grow. You've been a fan for a little while. What do you think about the expansion of it and the competition out there and the different leagues? Obviously, the UFC is the best, and you're part of that. So, what's that feel like?
My thought is still now. I mean, yeah, the sport has evolved, and I was talking to a guy on the plane coming here to Texas, and, you know, he was talking about Diego Sanchez. And, you know, back in the day when Diego Sanchez got in, and, you know, he could take everybody down at will and do what he wanted to do. You know, that was not that long ago when he was able to do that. Now, look at it. You can't take anybody down like you used to. It's changed completely. So, yeah, the sport has changed, it's evolved, and it's just getting bigger and better every day.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, the one theme that keeps repeating itself is these guys that are the big names and the legends of the sport continue to be kind of dethroned by these up-and-coming guys that just have a more well-rounded game. They don't rely on one single style. And they just come to fight. You know, they got more energy, they got more drive, they got more hunger. Perfect example is Chris Leben getting beat by Brian Stamm. You know, here's a guy who's had all these fights and, you know, fights and 3 weeks rest, and a young guy, up and coming guy like Brian Stamm just pounds him out.
Yeah, it happens. That's why, you know, MMA is just a great step. You never know what to expect. You know, like the NFL, you know, I got respect for him. NBA, I got respect for him, but it's like nothing's like MMA. NFL and NBA, you can pretty much tell who's going to win this game. You know what I mean? But in MMA, it's every man for himself. You know, it's a team effort, but it's not a team effort at the same time. So, you know, it's a crazy sport. So I think that's why everybody loves it, and that's why it's becoming more popular than any other sport in the world.
And I read that you train at Kung Lee's facility there.
I have.
Do you actually work with him at all?
I have worked with him before.
Does he try to teach you all his kicks and stuff, or you got a different style than him?
You know, it's a lot of different kicks and stuff to learn, so, you know, we just went with the flow and whatever we felt comfortable with.
Yeah, I was totally amazed with him when I first saw him fight and the two Scott Smith fights, just incredible wars he's been through. And we actually had one of my first interviews with him. He was probably one of the toughest interviews I ever had because he kept answering like yes and no. Tell him the questions. It's come a long way. He obviously had his first loss there, but he came right back from it and got the rematch locked down.
But he brings a different style to the sport. I noticed that. And one of the things I've been talking about the last few months with a lot of the guests is just the general attitude and the style of MMA in general lately seems to be more focused on the stand-up. And I don't know whether that's because the fans like it more or because it's just, that's the way it's moving. I don't know. Have you noticed that it's more of a stand-up game now?
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that the MMA has turned into more of a stand-up game, or it's more about strikes?
Sure, yes. Everybody wants to see some stand-ups and some knockouts and stuff. You know,
not everybody wants to see wrestling all the time and jiu-jitsu all the time. I mean, most people get their money, and the fans get their money worth by people doing stand-up, not, you know,
playing
and praying, you know?
Right. I mean, it seems like the fans have kind of appreciated, learned to appreciate more of the ground game, too, but they still like that better. They like the stand-up better. But back when the sport first started, I could remember watching a fight either in person or on TV, and you'd hear the fans booing if it even went to the ground. And now you don't hear that anymore. As much.
Everybody wants an entertaining fight, you know?
Right. So does that make you want to focus more on striking? When you go into
No, I just do me, man. I don't worry about all of that. The fans like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there... is there anything that really, going into this Dan Hardy fight, is there anything that you're doing differently to prepare specifically for him?
I just do my same regular training, and I'm actually, training harder than I ever have before, but I still got my same coach, and I got a new jiu-jitsu coach, so everything is coming into place.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think about Dana White and the one thing that we've mentioned before on the show? I always forget, but one guy said that there's something crazy about MMA is that Dana White seems to be the most recognizable figure of the sport. Do you see that? Do you notice that? And is it something that you've gotten used to? What do you think about it?
It never really crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it. I don't worry about all that. I'm too busy trying to train and make myself better.
Right. So
Dana's already established himself. You know, I need to establish myself. I don't need to watch every movie he's making to, all that stuff.
And what's the most important thing that you do to get ready for a typical fight?
Excuse me?
What would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a typical fight?
What's the most important thing?
Right.
The most important thing is really, everything is going to fall in place. You know, you just got to stay focused. That's what it is to me.
Yeah, when you get into a training camp, do you do a lot of conditioning, running, and stuff like that in addition to the fight training?
Oh yeah, of course.
And what's been your most, your best? What would you say was your toughest fight? And also your best fight?
I think my best fight was against Kevin Burns. And my toughest fight, I don't know. I don't think my competition is tough. I'm my toughest opponent.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
you know. You don't lose the fight really until you tell yourself you've lost.
Right.
You lose that mental edge that you're supposed to have. You know, but, you know, shit happens. And like I say, you know, sometimes you lose your focus and you get things up and, you know, it's how it is.
And what was your best moment in the sport so far?
Knocking out Kevin Burns.
And what was that fight like?
It was a relief because I finally, got what I deserved, and that was that win. That he got a win the W4 for Kobe and I.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the best victory to me.
You're
going to beat me fair and square. Don't beat me by, you know, poking me high and taking credit for it.
Do you get a chance to avenge the controversial loss to you?
Huh?
You have a chance to avenge that situation?
Oh, yeah.
Now, do you have anybody out there that you think is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world right now?
GSP and Fedor.
And what are you?
Jose Aldo.
GSP and who?
Fedor, and Jose Aldo.
Jose Aldo. Actually, it's kind of funny you mention that because, you know, I got a little bit of a history in college boxing, and Tony and I both actually were supposed to fight back in the day. When we were in college in the late 90s, and we were in the same weight class, and ended up doing this radio show after the fact, but we never did fight. But people ask me all the time, you know, why didn't you go into MMA? And MMA kind of started late in my involvement in fighting myself, but to tell you the truth, I thought about it, and then I saw Jose Aldo. the fight between Jose and Cub Swanson. Sure, you've probably seen it where Jose came right out with a flying knee and just nailed him right on the button, right off the bell, and just hit him with 6 or 7 punches before the ref could even get over there to stop it. And I say, after watching that, I don't think I'm ready.
No, but Jose, he's amazing, man. It's hard to fight a guy like him. Dude is just talented in every aspect of the game, you know. That dude he's incredible.
He's so quick. Unbelievably quick. And as far as, you know, the growth of the sport, the way it's evolved, like we talked about, do you see that any big problems in the sport that you'd like to see fixed or...
And the judges, a lot of times, you know, the judges make calls and stuff that, you know, shouldn't have went the way that they did. You know, but it is what it is. That's why you can't leave fighting and, you know, hands of the judges. And you got to go out there and do your thing.
No, yeah, I was really impressed that Joe Rogan addressed it that one time. Where he actually went out in the broadcast and it was the man fan fight there. The Ultimate Fighter finale, and he's just a little bit of a tirade, which he's known to do. But the fight that really bothered me more than that was the Rampage Jackson fight, where he sat down after the fight, and then he raised the other guy's hand after the fight. You know, like he acknowledged himself that he lost, and the judges still gave it to the other guy, you know.
And once they get called, you know, they're not going to reverse it. Because that's how they did, you know, like that's how they did me. They're not going to reverse that call. They're going to stick with it all the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Dana White came right up and said, no immediate rematch. Which I thought was kind of weird, but then, you know, he's the boss.
Yep, that is true.
Now, do you have anything that you like to do? Do you have a hobby or anything outside the ring, in the cage?
Bikes. I like, you know, I race pit bulls and stuff like that, too. I love being around animals and my dogs. And I don't know, man. I anything that really sounds like it's pretty fun. I'll try it out once.
So you must not be a fan of Michael Vick then, huh?
Michael's paid his dues already, you know, and I'm over that. And, you know, he made a mistake, and you know, it is what it is. I mean, you know, a lot of people throw in the man's case about what he did in the past. Well, it's the past, you know. The man is playing football.
Paul, I'm a Philadelphia guy.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I'm a Philadelphia guy.
Nice. You know, like I said, look at how where he come from. You know what I mean? He was an amazing player before he went in jail. He went to jail, the prison, wherever he went, and came back out, you know, and it took him, what, a season to really get going again. You know what I mean? And the guy did amazing things for a guy to just get out of the situation he was just in. You know, a lot of people are starting to respect him again. Well, that's good, because get over what he did. I mean, it's in the past. Nobody's trying to remember the past like that anymore. So, you know, people should be happy and just support the guy. What are you doing now? Because he regrets what he did, and he knew what he did was wrong. So nobody's perfect. Get over it. Life goes on, and just, you know, look forward to the future. Don't live off the past.
Yeah, I'm kind of had the same sentiment myself, and yes, there was at one point he talked about he wanted a dog for his family, and all kinds of media blasted him for it. You know, the guy's just he's trying to move past things, and people just don't want to forget. You know, we're supposed to be a society that's all about redemption, and you know, you got to give a guy like that credit for at least showing that it can be done. You know, you can come back from prison and end up being a role model to a lot of people. So hopefully, you know, he continues on that path and keeps doing what he's doing. But if you could change anything about the sport at MMA, what do you think that would be?
I don't think nothing needs to be changed. But besides, you know, the judge things, that's it. I wish they still had some of the pride rules.
Yeah. Soccer kicks to the head, that sort of thing.
You know, that'd make it more fun.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of times where, you know, some of the rules are just based on some weird situations. Like I heard the whole 12-6 elbow deal was based on one of the regulators seeing somebody doing a demonstration where they broke a block of ice with that type of strike. So, is that really a good basis for banning that move? I don't know. I don't think so. But, I can imagine that, you know, some of the things that they supposedly had to do just to get it regulated. Actually, Chris Lytle, we had on a few weeks ago, you know, he misses most about some of the other rules that he used to fight under with the headbutts. He used to be able to headbutt in some of his fights. And he was a specialist at that move, so. Yeah.
Right.
You know, roll with the punches, so to speak. Do you see a lot of kids getting involved at your gym? Do you help out with a lot of the training at all? Getting them involved?
Right now, I just focus on just getting myself better before I even worry about trying to get anybody else, you know, in my situation or position, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just do me and just keep trying to go forward. You know, a lot of people ask me, why haven't I tried to open up a gym? No, I need to get myself better and worry about me before I do all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as your own style, do you have more of like a tactician style? Are you a brawler, or striker, grappler? What would you say is just your main style?
I'm a striker, of course. You know, I just do what I have to do to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or thank? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like my family, all of my friends and fans, and everybody who supported me. And without you, I wouldn't be who I am right now.
Mm-hmm. And any final thoughts or words for Dan Hardy before we take off here?
Nah, you know, go out and let's put on a great show.
All right. Well, we'll definitely be watching you, and I look forward to seeing that fight. I think, you know, both of you are going to be going in there with a lot to try to prove, I guess. I mean, obviously you're coming off a layoff, and he's coming off a couple losses, so it seems like it's the perfect powder keg situation, so it's bound to be a good fight. But
it's going to be a very, very good fight.
All right. I'm definitely going to watch it, and we'll keep in touch.
All right.
Have a good night. Thanks for
coming
out. All right, so that's Anthony. And my man, I have too many words, but it was a pretty good interview. Kind of ran out of questions there at one point. He was answering so quickly, I thought, what am I going to ask next? I have to go to the old list. 20 questions. he's going to be fighting on a pretty big card. There's a UFC fight night. That's going to be in Seattle on March 26th. UFC fight night 24. And the big fight on that card, the main event, is actually Tito Ortiz's return against Antonio Rogério Nogueira. And as we probably talked about a few weeks ago when it happened, Chuck Liddell retired, so Tito's not going to be fighting him anytime soon. Or at all. Dan Hardy versus Johnson is going to be the premium event for that fight. We also have Amir Sadala versus Dwayne Ludwig, Aaron Simpson versus Mario Miranda, John Hathaway versus Chris McCray, and the rematch of the fight that we just talked about not too long ago. We started talking about the judging. Nianfan versus Leonard Garcia, the rematch. And also another Ultimate Fighter alumni from the last season, Alex Bruce Leroy Caceres versus Mackenzie Samirzier. And we have Sean McCorkle versus Christian Moorcraft, who's a local guy here, not here since I'm in New Hampshire, but down in Massachusetts where I used to live. I actually saw him come up through the circuit there and saw a bunch of his early fights before he got brought up to the UFC. And he had a particularly tough fight against the skyscraper, Stefan Struve. He's just notorious for coming back from some serious beatings to win fights. And Christian gave him a pretty bad beating in the first round. And then, of course, Struve did what he always does, and came back and won in the second. Also, Michael McDonald versus Mick Pace, Mike Russo versus John Madsen, and Dennis Hallman versus Anthony Waldberger on that card. Other than that, we got a bunch of events in MMA coming up this weekend. We got Gladiator Fight in Curitiba, Brazil. Rad Rock MMA Championships in Coral Springs, Florida. It's on Saturday. Way of the Warrior in Reno, Nevada. On Saturday, Bad Girls Gone Wild. Must be an all girl club. In Sheridan, Colorado. I hate to be a guy fighting on a card named Bad Girls Gone Wild. Beatdown is happening in Porterville, California on Saturday. And actually, that's Friday, I should say. These are all Friday. Saturday, Fight for the Troops 2. The big UFC card, and the main event there is Melvin Guillard versus Evan Dunham. And Evan Dunham is actually, I don't know about a different guy I'm thinking of. I was going to say he's the guy that, one of the guys who beat John Howard, who Anthony just talked about wanting to fight, but that's the wrong one. I'm thinking of Jake Ellenberger. Matt Meathead Mitch Trione, who was the guy that helped escort Kimbo out of the UFC, fighting Tim Hague. That should be a pretty good fight. Mark Hominick fighting George Roop. Patrick Barry versus Joey Beltran. Cole Miller versus Matt Wyman. Demarcus Johnson versus Michael Diamond. And Eve Edwards versus Cody McKenzie, who's another alumni of the latest Ultimate Fighter season, and his specialty is the guillotine choke. He's technically undefeated, even though he lost on the show. I guess it doesn't go towards your actual MMA record. But Eve Edwards is a longtime veteran of the sport, and I actually saw him in a fight in Worcester, the one that Butterbean promoted, the last live fight I went to out there in Worcester. I think it was last year, the year before. Eve Edwards, he had a real tough fight and lost by, I think, split decision. But a lot of people thought he won the fight. I just make sure to double check that. That was it. And his last fight in the UFC was in September. Thought John Gunderson won by decision. But yeah, his loss was to Mike Campbell at Musum out of Martial Arts in May of 2010, so it was last year. It was a decision. It was a unanimous decision, not a split decision, sorry. But a lot of people thought he won. I thought he did a great job. I actually filmed some of it, so. It was a good fight. But he's had a couple wins since then. He went to Bellator Fighting Championships for one fight before he got back to the UFC for Fight Night 22 in September. And it should be a really good fight. I'm interested in seeing how it goes. Hopefully he'll stick around. He's a great fighter and he's got a lot of experience. Waylon Lowe will be fighting Willamy Frere, Amilcar Alves versus Charlie Brenneman, and Ronnie Yaha versus Mike Brown, the Norris grad. And then finally, Will Campuzano versus Chris Carriasco on the UFC Fight for the Troops this Saturday. Also, out in Salem, Oregon, we got Resolution 2, United Fight Night 1 in Lakewood, Washington. On Saturday, Thunder and Lightning Combat in Cage 10 in Lewiston, Idaho. Spokane Showdown 15 in Spokane, Washington on Saturday. Rumble at the Roseland 54 in Portland, Oregon. And Pro FC Union Nation Cup in Tbilisi, Georgia, also on Saturday. World Extreme Fighting in Jacksonville, Florida, Saturday. And a couple more on Saturday. We got Ralston versus Boots in V3 Fights, Memphis, Tennessee, in the beginning under HF1 in Split, Dalmatia County, Croatia. And then we also have one fight on Sunday this week in Voivodeship, Poland. Poland versus Ukraine, Fight on the East. There that is. There you have it. That's the mixed martial arts schedule for the week. The weekend, I should say. And we went over all the boxing stuff I could find. Actually, I think we only did the first page of Saturday's boxing. Let me check what else we got there. The Vacant International Boxing Organization International Lightweight title is on the line in the United Kingdom, Liverpool. Between Derry Matthews, 25-5 with 12 knockouts, and Scott Lawton, 27-7 with 6 knockouts. A 12-rounder there. And good fight on that card. And Evander Holyfield's fighting this weekend, too, I think. The 10. I don't have it right in front of me, but we'll get to that. We also have a fight in St. Louis, Mississippi. Will McIntyre, light heavyweights, 40-4, a 14-0. Sorry about that, folks. I don't know where we left off. Tony! Tony, with us?
I'm here.
Well, what was the last thing you heard me say before I cut out?
You're going, I don't remember. That was like 30 seconds ago. I am literally on the point of, like, passing out.
I think I was going over the Evander Holyfield card there. We got four heavyweight fights on that card. Evander, obviously, at the top, 43-10 with 28 knockouts, two draws, fighting Sherman Williams, 34-11 with 19 knockouts, two draws. We got Cedric Boswell, 32-1 with 25 knockouts, fighting Dominique Alexander at heavyweight with 19 wins, 9 knockouts, 9 losses, and 1 draw. Monty Barrett, back in action, 34-9, 20 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Charles Davis, who's 19-21, 2 draws and 4 knockouts. And we have another heavyweight fight between Kevin Johnson, who's 23-1, 1 draw, 10 knockouts, fighting Julius Long, who's 15-14, 13 knockouts.
Isn't he like 7 feet tall or something?
What?
Isn't he like 7 feet tall or something?
Julius Long?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Check that out.
There's one Julius guy that's like 7 feet tall, and there's one fault in that place, and I can never get the right one right.
7'1", his nickname is the Towering Inferno.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. Rain man of boxing coming out of you.
Somebody kicked his ass real bad. I can't remember who it was that knocked out like 3 rounds.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the altercation at the Cotto and Mayorga press conference?
No.
Oh yeah, they're promoting their fight on March the 12th, and Cotto has a WBA, God knows what belt it is, silver, super, whatever. So he was there. Mayorga tried to take the belt from him, and then said that he feels bad for Cotto's mother, because she's watching him take too many beatings, and he's going to give him the final one on March the 12th, and then his mother won't have to watch him take beatings anymore because that one's going to be so severe it's going to be over for him. And then Cotto said, you got 7 weeks. And then after 7 weeks, you're done. So that should be interesting. You know, Mayorga's not the prettiest fighter in the world, and if Cotto boxes smart, I mean, uses his good body attack and uses his superior ability, he should beat Mayorga. Well, see, Mayorga's a funny guy. It's like, if you get a guy that tries to stand in front of him and be macho, he's going to give you a lot of problems. Oscar De La Hoya was too good for him, too fast, you know, fought a perfect game plan. Shane Mosley did not fight him well, and it was an ugly fight and a dirty fight, and Mosley was off his game until he caught Mayorga and knocked him out with like 5 seconds to go. Vernon Forrest, great fighter, lost to Mayorga twice just because he let Mayorga get in his head. And then guys like Felix Trinidad kicked his ass. I mean, then you get Fernando Vargas, who was near the end of his career, but he let Vargas let Mayorga get right into his head, and Mayorga beat him. So if Cotto is on top of his game and fights smart, no reason he shouldn't win that fight convincingly. If he lets Mayorga draw him out of his game, it could be a long night for him.
Yeah. If he loses to a smoker, he's going to look pretty bad. He's trying to get a rematch between him and Shane Mosley, too. That's the latest word. But I don't know if that's going to happen. But Mayorga has been doing a few interviews where he just lights up a cigarette. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. I like, you know,
his opponent having trouble making weight, and he would get on the scale and eat something in front of him. He's a character, that's for sure. Actually, Don King had to get a restraining order against him. Not a restraining order, an injunction to prevent him from going into MMA down there in Florida, too. So, obviously, he had to instigate a little publicity stunt there and a lot of ways just to get the attention back on him so he could get a fight in the first place. And it must have worked because this is a pretty big fight for him. Cotto's not really that much in the championship talk lately as much as he used to be. He hasn't had many good fights to look back on in the last couple of years, but you know, he's a lot of talk about. He's going to be back for this fight, and it should be interesting. My other guy, I think, is a little bit older. Not completely positive he's that much older, but old enough where he's got more to prove going into this one, I think, than Cotto does, but. He's got the experience factor. You can never knock that. So we shall see. Other than that, I don't have much else. Any parting words there?
I'm pretty beat, man. My hands are sore from hitting the heads. I'm ready to go to bed.
All right. Starting off 10 minutes early then, and we'll see you next week. We're going to try to get a couple Maryland boxing promoters on the show who've joined forces after years of being competitors. And even though they've been friends for a while, they actually just got into business together for once instead of running competing shows. So we'll talk to them next week and get Tony back to his realm.
I do have some emails that I have to send you. I got a couple guys that are interested in being on our show. Larry Twinandi, who we had interviewed a couple years ago, the ring announcer. He would be more of just a guy for an excellent open boxing forum. You know, just a guy to talk to, go over fights with, knowledgeable about the sport. And he's good. He's funny. He's a good guy. So I talked to him last week, and he's interested in being back on just to talk fights with us. And also that Joey I, the boxing, he's a cut man. He's a trainer. Now he's opening his own gym, and he's also doing some promotional work. He's got a show coming up on Saturday down right outside of Philadelphia. If I didn't have tickets to the hockey game, because my friend's brother is presenting the flag at mid-ice. He just got back from Afghanistan. And I told my friend, I'd love to go to that game to see him do it. Then I come to find that there's a fight card right outside of Philly, and I could have went. But I'll have to catch up on the next one. He's going to be doing a lot of cards.
All right. Yeah, maybe get him on the same show.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like it when we have two guests, or a little smoother,
That's funny, because Larry is the guy that introduced me to Joey about a year ago.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. All right, well, that's all I got, man. I will talk to you next week.
All righty. All right. Adios, folks. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.